Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, welcome to Blackticulate, a podcast series featuring UK young black professionals, where we find out how they do what they do, so you can too. Or not, after all. It is your life. Hi guys, it's Ade here, and we've got a couple of announcements. But first, we'd like to take a moment to tell you how much we appreciate you listening to this show and building a community that we feel, and please, I hope you guys agree, is raising a tide of black excellence. Everything we do here at Blackticulate is because of you, and we truly rely on you not only to help spread the word, but also to keep us in check over the quality of services that we are providing you. Things like our podcasts, things like our workshops, as well as our events. So starting this month, Blackticulate really could do with your help. We will be hiring for a few job roles that might be of interest to you or perhaps somebody you know. If you head over to blackticulate.com and under the job section, you will see the vacancies that are available. Check it out. Please get in touch. If it's not right for you, then it might be right for someone else. So remember, do share, do spread the love. We just really want to grow this community and make it better and better and better. The other announcement that we want to make before introducing today's guest is that Blackticulate will be part of the Shout Out Live Festival on August the 5th at Russell Square, London. Now, if you guys haven't already heard what the Shout Out Live Festival is, it really truly is a podcast festival that will be featuring people of colour podcasters. In fact, we're not going to do it justice. So what we recommend is you go to solivefestival.com where there'll be a full list of the lineup of podcasters as well as more information about the day. So yeah, just hit the pause button now. Go check it out. Welcome back. I'm hoping you guys hit the pause button and went to go check out the website. And how amazing does the lineup look, right? Got podcasters like Another Round and even The Brilliant Idiots, UK podcasters Melon and Millennials, Mostly Lit, you name it, pretty much anyone who's doing anything, who's established or certainly up and coming is going to be there. But specifically, what Blackticulate will be doing will be chairing a panel discussion on how to make a podcast commercially sustainable. And if you are interested, then please do go over to the site to buy your ticket. And use Blackticulate5 discount code where you'll get £5 off ticket prices. Would love to see you there. Would love just for you to come say hi because it's really, really valuable. Just almost see you guys who listen to what we do. So really appreciate it. Go over to solivefest.com to go get your ticket. Now today's guest is amazing. Ashanti Bentil-Jew. She's a virgin startup mentor and business consultant that specializes in the food industry. And no word of a lie, Ashanti knows her stuff. God, does she know her stuff. And she's graciously tells us how she started her platform, as well as what we ought to consider before starting a similar platform, or specifically we're looking to get into the food industry. So without further ado, I bring to you Ashanti. Welcome to another episode of Blackticulate. For those of you who don't know what Blackticulate is, how dare you? How very dare you? But Blackticulate is really and truly a podcast series that features UK young black professionals where we try and find out how they do what they do so you can too. So we've got a shanty in the house. What work? Say what work at least.
What work?
Wow. Okay. Cheers. That feels forced. So a shanty. You're gonna have to tell my audience who you are. Am I saying your name right? Ashanti Bentil
Diu. Yes.
What a name.
Yes.
Where's
yes.
that from?
Half Ghanaian, half Jamaican.
Aren't we not meant to be able to mix? When I say we, we're talking African situation.
I know. I do get that
look
a lot, actually.
Yeah, the Romeo and Juliet. And
but that story ends badly.
Wow. Okay, so tell the people who you are, and then let's roll from there.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure. I'm Shanti. I am a business consultant, Virgin Startup Mentor. And anyway, I just love all things food and business, which is why I help people start and grow food businesses.
You help people start and grow food businesses?
Yes.
Okay. How does one all of a sudden become a Virgin Media startup mentor?
Yeah.
Then going into the food industry as a vertical, teaching that. Was that always the dream? I wonder.
So it's quite interesting. So I always wanted to be a barrister.
A barrister?
So that's what I actually studied at university. I went to do law. That was always my childhood goal. So
okay.
I never wavered from that. In fact, university was a doddle because of that.
Really?
Yeah. I wouldn't say I worked during my degree at all because I just absolutely loved everything I was learning.
Okay. Which uni did you go to?
London Met.
London Met,
yeah,
okay.
Stayed local, DLR ride. So yeah, so went to London Met, did law, but by the end of the second year, I did know that I would not go on to become a barrister.
Why is that?
Because I realised what I really liked about being a barrister was the self-employed element and the fact that there's a lot of variety. I don't know if they are now, but before, you work for a chamber, but you have to kind of almost pitch for work and do all those. So there was a lot of autonomy as opposed to working with a law firm. And especially when you go through the graduate scheme and then you become a trainee, you're watched 24/7. And from the very beginning, they teach you how to kind of even clock your minutes to obviously get paid by the client. And I'm not really a follower. You have to be a follower to go through the grad scheme and go through the training contract period. And I'm not good at that kind of stuff. So I already knew that going the traditional route to become a solicitor wasn't for me. And then I realized that with becoming a barrister, that wasn't truly the whole essence of the role. Probably wasn't me. And
yeah,
I didn't want to do criminal law.
Why that as an angle? Because that's not something you grow up thinking you want to be. Is it?
In terms of a barrister?
Yeah.
Or
just, was it an environment? Is it your parents? Are they into that?
So I was always very interested in the law because I like to know why things are the way they are.
Okay.
And, so, you know, when you study law, you come to understand how these laws came about, where they come from, but also you start learning how flawed they are in terms of real life. So some people are dealt with very harshly by the law and other people seem to abscond responsibility.
Let's be real. You're talking about people of colour here, aren't you? The law does not favour us at all.
Or any kind of minority or, I think, underrepresented sector of society. Unfortunately, if you don't know how the law works, you can fall foul of it quite easily. Mm. And I'm talking outside of, obviously, breaking the law in its raw sense. But then there are other issues where I think because people have lack of knowledge, therefore they're not in control and they can't empower themselves.
Oh, you've got to give me an example. Because that is such a profound thing.
Well, something as simple that struck me when I was studying law, for example, you know, if you don't pay your TV license, you know, that is actually, it can become a criminal offence. And I remember one lecture, the lecturer explained that the numbers of single mothers in prison at that time because they didn't pay their license. And obviously the knock-on effect of that is their kids going to care. So that's more actually burden on the taxpayer versus a £12.95 a month license. Was there no other way that situation could have been dealt with, you know? So those things really did shock me. Yeah.
Oh, wow. What were you like as a child then?
I never had toys.
Siblings and stuff? You never had toys?
I was very much into reading.
Right.
Always read books and just worked really hard at school. My family are very studious and academic, you know.
Where did you
oriented.
What school? What area did you grow up?
So I grew up in Catford.
Catford.
Southeast London.
All right, Catford. Woo woo. Anyone listening from there? Ashanti is your peeps.
So yeah, just normal, regular environment.
Of course, you didn't have toys.
I just wasn't interested in them. My mum always says that I just didn't play with toys that much, really. No. It was books. You'd give me a book and I'd finish that within a day or two. I consumed books at a very fast pace.
And that's such at an early age as well.
Love reading.
Oh, amazing.
But again, I think it's all about power and being able to empower yourself through knowledge.
Right.
That's what I enjoyed about it, because you were always learning something that helped me kind of move forward in my thinking. Or
And did you share that knowledge? Brothers, sisters,
yes,
siblings?
I do. So I'm the oldest of quite a few of us. Oldest of quite a few of us. And I was the only girl until 10, 11 years between us. So I was the only girl for a long time.
Right. How many and brothers then, and sisters?
So there's me, there's five of us in total. So my sister is the youngest. So, right. Yeah. So,
was there any pressures? Do you find?
Not really.
Like,
not
because
really.
I know a lot of, I mean, like, my sister's the eldest of three of us.
Yes.
And she always felt, for some reason, this is not true, that she always had to look after us. Yeah, I'm putting her underneath the bus.
I guess there is a responsibility with being older, and I guess if you're the first child, your parents, you're a trial run to a large degree, aren't they? So you could get the harsher side or the lighter side, depending on where your parents are in their life when they have you. But it's interesting that we're all very different, and I think that that's a good thing. And because I did go a very conventional route, they don't have to.
Right, gotcha. So it's like, forget it, you guys, you can be experimental.
Do what you like, yeah. At this point. But
so,
yeah.
So you get on well with your parents? How's
yes,
that?
Yeah. We're very family-oriented. My mum has really been the beacon of that. She loves family and all that it stands for, but in the true sense.
Is she a Ghanaian one?
So she's Ghanaian and Jamaican. So very interesting upbringing. So for me, it's been dual in many ways.
Right, gotcha. Okay, well, here's a thing I normally try and ask my guests now.
Okay.
Oh, I'm going to, you know, it's a conversation, so I never really remember it. But I like always hearing stories about the first time you recall being black or other.
I really have to think about that, because I think that the first time I probably realised I was different, I think that's what I would say the feeling was initially. I don't think I necessarily realised it was because I was black, because at such a young age, I don't think you necessarily understand all of the things that come with that.
Yeah.
But I think you remember feeling different. So I would say that would have been in nursery, because I was the only black child in nursery.
Right, gotcha.
But I felt different because my hair was different, and obviously I looked different to the other children. And it was when another girl came into the class who was brown that I realised how different I was to the other children.
I see.
Yeah.
So you recognise Jane Kinnan, you're like, wait a minute.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's what I'd say is the first time I realised I was different. Because obviously outside of that, in my family, I'm normal or just the same as everybody else.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Can we join the dots then? Because all of a sudden you went to uni, London Met, to become a barrister.
Yes.
But you're not.
I know, yeah.
So what happened?
Yeah, so what did I do after university? What did happen? I needed a job when I finished university. So I applied to become an adjudicator at the Financial Ombudsman Service. So essentially, you are a dispute resolution professional in the finance sector.
So what, you literally had to sit in front of two parties and just say, no, almost like a divorce lawyer.
In some senses, yes. The customer or the small business would present their argument and all of their evidence.
Yep.
And then I would assess that argument and evidence, ask the financial institution for their response, and then make a decision as to whether or not we'd uphold or reject the complaint.
Right.
So very similar in many ways to the legal
Precisely,
background that I had. It was just in a financial setting.
Critical,
So I would definitely say I got kind of pushed to my limit in terms of, you know, public facing work, because it was very customer service heavy.
Right,
as well. Yeah.
You're fascinating, because I still haven't joined a doc. So Shanti, tell me then, post this, because 3 years into it,
yes,
I assume you're probably financially nice and stable, you're all good. Was it a risk for you to then decide, you know what, I'm gonna forget this and go on?
So it wasn't such of a gap, because after that role at the Financial Ombudsman Service, I actually went to work for some bigger banks.
Oh, wow, okay.
So I went deeper into the corporate world, and that was a very steep learning curve for me, because the Financial Ombudsman Service is kind of, it's quasi-corporate, quasi-charity, because obviously you're doing public-facing work.
Yeah.
And so you still think about ethics and values and treating the customer fairly. Whereas in a corporate environment, yes, that's what some of these institutions should be doing. But the reality of being an employee in those corporate environments is very different.
Yeah, for sure.
And I hadn't really been in the thick of that before. So that was a steep learning curve for me, because in many ways, I brought the values and ethics that I had into those roles.
Yeah.
But you're operating in an environment where not everybody lives by those values.
Yeah. I'm smiling because, albeit you're being diplomatic, I just know these scenarios and these scenes. Can you extract any stories out there with names?
You know, people can be very dishonest. So what I mean by that is, in the public sector, there'll be grades. Everyone will know what grade they're on, and they will know what objectives they need to meet under each of those grades. Some environments, they may have something on the intranet, but in reality, that's not how it works. And this is why I'm very passionate about what I do now, because I realise too late, really, the importance of personal branding.
Right.
So I was very good at networking, but the personal branding, I did not create a brand for myself within those big banks. And that's quite important in this day and age.
Right.
So I was somebody who was just very good at doing my job, and that's not enough.
Right.
Okay, so you can't just be a nice person. You can't just be good at your job. You need to understand how you build a brand around yourself in micro environments, i.e. your team or your department, so that you can leverage that to get promotions, for example.
Right, yeah.
And so that's what the steep learning curve for me was, because the people around me understood how to build personal brands, even though they weren't always very good at their job. So I was that person who would work really hard. I would pull that presentation together, move a project onto the next level and not get the credit for it. And after that happens a number of times, you have to ask yourself why, and start analysing what the differences are between the people who you're sitting next to who really have less substance than you. And so I'm glad I did make that move from, you know, kind of financial ombudsman setting into these big corporate banks and really experience the reality of working there.
Yeah, no, jeez. That's insane, because do you know who Neil Gaiman is?
No.
Okay, Neil Gaiman is like this, he's an author. He's a writer, and he has probably one of the best commencement speeches known to men, and I think it's called Make Good Art. And within it, he goes, it's very easy to continuously get a job, because all you need is pretty much two out of these three things. So the three things are: be on time, do good work, and be liked. And if you get two out of the three, then you're always going to get a job, right? So you don't have to do good work, but if you're on time and you're liked, happy days.
Yes.
But if you're not liked, but you're on time and you do good work, you always get work.
Yes, so exactly. But actually, to elevate yourself, you need all three. And I believe that, you know, I was just having this conversation the other day with somebody else, and I was saying that, you know, I think that there are a lot of initiatives and projects out there that are designed to help young people make a transition from school, university into some of these corporate environments, but it's those elements that they're not teaching. So they help you go through the assessment, they help you, you know, get through the interview, but what they're not telling you is the reality of actually working there. It's those hidden, invisible codes of behavior and practice that you need to understand very early how to leverage. It's not good enough just to pass the test. It's not good enough to be liked in the interview. And I think that's why a lot of people are not surviving the corporate world very long.
Interesting.
Because they haven't necessarily understood those skills and how they can leverage them within themselves.
Can you teach that?
I think you can.
And it remains authentic. This day and age, obviously, the new Gen Z or something.
Yeah.
They're just pretty much all about PR themselves in the best way, because that's all they know. So to me, that is their authentic self, because that's literally all they know. But for someone like myself, slightly older generation, I almost crawl at the thought of putting my face
out there like that,
out there, and just showing where I am, etc. Because like, why does that matter? Let me enjoy the experience then and then.
There's a number of elements at play here. It just depends what your goal is, number one, because I believe that there is a way to walk both sides in a comfortable way.
Okay, explain more on that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
Because you're teaching me here.
So I do believe there's a way you can do it by deciding and classifying what you're comfortable with other people knowing.
Right.
Gotcha. I think that's where it starts. It's like, okay, if I wasn't in the room and people were saying this about me, would I be comfortable with what they were sharing?
Ah, interesting.
Once you've decided what it is you want to share, then that's the image that you present on a consistent basis, of course, to build a kind of consistent personal brand.
Right.
That's how I...
No, that's absolutely perfect. I mean, I love that. if you weren't in the room and people said this about you, would you be okay?
Would you be okay? If you are okay with that and you feel that that represents you fully, and, you know, let's bear in mind, some people don't mind negativity being out there about them.
Right.
You know, they're not going to be bothered. And on equally, that negativity may have been what's propelled them to where they are now. We know celebrities like that, where maybe everyday people would think that's not very positive, but they've been able to leverage that,
yeah,
and elevate their brand.
And Richard Chase. Okay, Shanti. So we're now in a corporate setting.
Yeah.
What's our next move? I mean, we're always joining.
Basically, that did not sit well with me.
Yes.
I didn't fit into that environment, is the truth. And that's exactly what I told my manager when I resigned.
Was it a shock?
Yes and no. Okay. I think they were shocked that I took control of that process. For me, it was the well-being side of things. I was not comfortable. I felt that there was too much contradiction in my values and the values of the people that I worked with on a daily basis.
Right.
And that was evident in the things that they would say and do to other people.
Right, gotcha. So now that you pretty much resigned, I feel like, F this, I'm out of this place. What's our next?
So this is where it gets interesting. I went to another bank, and that decision was the one that I made out of fear, I believe, now looking back. Probably some financial fear, even though the interesting thing about life is when you look back, actually, nothing worse could have happened than you make up in your mind. So I started a job that involved a 6-hour daily commute.
Jeez.
Yeah, and that's why I said I believe that decision was made out of fear and a combination of external voices saying, just take the job because it's a very good job, considering you've just left somewhere. And people thought I was crazy to leave the place that I was at before. So it was like, well, you've gotten this other job, it's equal, go for it. And so that's what I did. Wrong decision.
Right.
Wrong decision, because what I should have done at that point is really act upon the self-reflection I'd done in that previous job and start my own business, which was something that I'd wanted to do for years.
Right.
And of course, I'd just been comfortable in a very conventional, traditional model. And so, yeah, I went into a job with a 6-hour daily commute, and I would not do that again.
That is insane.
You know, but what it did give me time to do was say to myself, no, you need to draw the line now, and you need to start making a living in a way that is healthy for you. And so that's how I transitioned into becoming a business consultant. I became a Virgin Startup Mentor at that point.
So what is that?
Yeah, sure. It's a relatively simple process. You go through, you can apply on their website initially, and then you have to go through some assessment. Obviously, they ask you about your background experience. They do.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination, YahooFinance.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ask you about your leadership style, your coaching style, who you think you can help the best, and then you go through an assessment and they come back and let you know whether or not you're qualified to become a Veggie Startup Mentor. So that's what I did, and
what's
that's
the
what
benefit
I've been doing.
Of doing that though? Do you get to financially? Me, do you get paid for mentoring?
No, it's no. Purely voluntary.
Okay.
But for me, it allows me obviously to be involved in a wide variety of business and startups, so you can really be on the inside and understand what's happening. And of course, the coaching element is hugely rewarding because I am therefore building up my skills as a consultant in being faced with the kind of everyday business problems that my mentees are facing. And so from that perspective, it's very challenging, but it's also very rewarding. And I would recommend it's a good option.
Okay. So help us out. You're a business consultant.
Yes.
For you've got actual clients now.
Yes.
And your niche is within the food.
Within the food.
Food isn't necessarily niche per se, but
yeah, so there are different ways that you can help people who want to start a food business.
Okay.
So my business is, we have an element of group coaching. So I run masterclasses now on a quarterly basis.
Okay.
So if you want to start or grow a business, if you're between 0 and 24 months in your business, then there's a masterclass specifically designed so that by the end of that day, you come away understanding whether the food business is right for you.
Right. Where's this held?
So these are, at the moment, they're in London, but the interesting thing is we will be going UK-wide in 2018. So
we
will start. I always say we, because
no,
that's from my corporate background. But I do actually work with my mum. She works with me now.
Amazing.
But I always say we, because that is just literally the legacy of working in a corporate environment.
And honestly, apparently it's something that we ought to do, the royal we, because when you do grow, then it doesn't become a weird shift.
Yes.
You know, communication and
dialogue. Yeah. But now this is an interesting point that I teach with my one-to-one clients. The personalization element of business is now ever more important. So people actually want to know who you are. And so, for example, on my website, I've had to change some of the copy to actually say I and not be in the third person, because it's proved to be very effective. Doing things like a podcast, people are actually getting to know you. So that was a shift that I had to make mentally from the corporate environment when starting my own business.
Yeah.
Yes.
Apologies, I derailed you a little.
No, that's okay. Yeah. So we have group masterclasses. They're one-day masterclasses at the moment. So if you have 0 to 24 months, even if you are starting a home-based business, and I think this is quite crucial, market-based business, or you've actually got bricks and mortar, like a small cafe or coffee shop.
So home-based business means you actually operate out of your home.
Exactly.
Marketplaces like market stores.
Market stores, right. Festivals, that
and
kind of thing.
And brick and mortar is like a retail
environment.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. So we've got group masterclasses for those individuals. Now, interestingly enough, there are some individuals who may have actually taken their business to a certain point already. So they may be in multiple stores. They may be really successful. They're generating revenue regularly in their business. And so I have a one-to-one service with them, because obviously at that point, they don't need the fundamental kind of foundational steps. They actually need some bespoke help at that point. So they're looking at ways that they can continue to elevate their business. So maybe explore other routes to market. At that point, network is really important, so I can share some of my contacts with them for them to take their brand in different directions.
Right.
So we have that group setting, and then we have that one-to-one consultancy.
How did you build
that process?
Yeah,
so how it all started was because when I really reflected, I always wanted a business, and I naturally always wanted to have a food business.
Why food, may I ask?
Food is a massive part of my family.
Exactly.
And also when I think about my family and I think about my mum and my grandmother, hospitality is a huge part of our family. It runs in our DNA. So
yeah, I think you mentioned your fondest childhood memory was your
grandma and cooking
speaking to you.
And time.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so those are the memories that I have of my childhood. So I always wanted to open a food business and use it as a hub, a base for hospitality within my local community. Now, you think to yourself, right, I've been in finance for so long, I understand what a business plan is, I've worked with small businesses before, I can do this. However, there are some nuances to the food business, and this is where those two, the self-reflection from my corporate career, started to kick in, because you need a personal brand, you need network, you need community to build your business. It's not just about having money.
Personal brand, network, community.
Those are crucial elements. And so this time around, I decided, why don't I build a community around the food business, meet all of the right people, and then launch my business.
Okay.
Instead of trying to start a food business and then scramble to get the rest together.
Yeah.
And that has worked out very well. What are we now? We're 16, 17 months later. I've built a community of around 500 women who are all in the food and drink industry. That doesn't include the men that obviously are in the industry as well that I have contact with. And now I've got a good idea of all the different routes that you can take to market. I've got a good idea of the reality of what it takes to build your business up. And now I can start my business with a lot more confidence and the right elements. So I just kind of flipped.
No, I hear that.
The model, really.
So how did you get about having, I guess, your network of 500 people?
It all started by looking online. I would literally just Google different combinations of words and brought up every food entrepreneur there was.
Right.
And then I started putting them in lists. So I would look at, do they have a cafe? Do they have a food delivery business? All of the different categories of food business, I'd list them under that. And then I literally just spent time on LinkedIn messaging them all.
Amazing. LinkedIn was your...
Yes. So I only had a lazy LinkedIn profile, had no personal social media. So that's all I could really start with.
Right.
And I would message them. And because I understood the importance of personal branding, so I didn't message them and say, I'm starting a business, can you help me? I messaged them and said, I'm interviewing food entrepreneurs to learn about
Straight,
how they do
go,
what they do.
Yeah, no doubt.
And of course, they love to talk about themselves. Most people do.
Yeah.
And so that's how the podcast show came about. So I just used it as a way to dig deeper, get under the skin, understand how they started their business, what were the challenges, the problems,
yeah,
and what advice would they give to other people who want to do the same.
You're sounding like Blacktickulate right about now.
Yeah.
So... are you profitable? Do you mind me asking?
Yeah, so we are nearly profitable now.
Okay, why are you not profitable? I used to be doing it from the house and consulting.
So I've changed the model. As I said, I do the masterclasses quarterly now, because before I would just put a masterclass on maybe every 6 to 8 weeks. But of course, you've got to do all that groundwork in terms of content marketing. That's huge to get people to trust you,
yeah,
to know you, to like you. And so I needed a longer runoff period in between actually holding the masterclasses. And so that's why I moved them to quarterly. And that gives me like 10 and a half weeks to build up enough content, not only on my site, but in the networks and the communities that I participate in. And so that's where this personal branding piece really comes in. Now we're 16, 17 months in, I'm starting to see that come to fruition now. So we're starting to benefit now from building this brand within this environment. And we are doing it in a very different way, because there are no other, in the UK, food consultancies who have a podcast show, for example. There are no other...
colour at that.
Well, that's a very good point. You know, I've spent quite a lot of time going to networking evenings and being dismissed or ignored. I think a large part of that is obviously they don't know who you are, but at the same time, they don't see that very often.
Yeah.
You know, there is no diversity from the consultancy perspective. As you know, in our culture, food is very common and popular.
Yeah.
The rate of food businesses that come from our culture is huge.
Yeah, 100%.
So I guess they're used to people maybe availing themselves of those resources, but not necessarily being the one to accumulate them, curate them, and then say, I have the authority and the know-how to actually teach you something. So it is very different. So I had to put a lot of groundwork in to build my personal brand, curate the content on our platform. So now we're seeing the benefits of that. We've just literally listed two of our flagship masterclasses, and now we're seeing that traction.
Amazing. So how are you doing that? By Eventbrite?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So one of the reasons, I've got it on our website, but I put it on Eventbrite because obviously it's a great search engine.
Yeah, and guys, by the way, I will put in how to get in touch with Shanti on our website. Show notes as much as I can.
Yeah. So we have two flagship courses. One is Food Media Uncovered. And that really is about, you know, there's a massive popularity in blogging, but how do you actually make that sustainable? And obviously, I've learned the hard way how to do that now. So that's something that I teach particularly to food bloggers food stylists and food photographers. A lot of people are starting these things as hobbies. They do want to make them sustainable, but they're not sure how. And a lot of that is in the structure. Do you have a business plan? Are you building community? How do you ensure that you have a consistent flow of clients? I've learned all of that stuff the hard way.
I definitely need to put you in touch with a friend of mine. She was actually your first ever episode on Black Tiffany. She's a phenomenal baker.
Right.
And Nastasha Lasengo, Zimbabwe born.
Was she recently on...
Extreme.
I did watch.
Cake
yes,
maker.
Yes.
So definitely to connect you. To
yeah,
you
yeah.
Hey, not only are you both phenomenal, like you're amazing people. So yeah, there's got to be a lot of magic because she's actually. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, so I might ask her
yes.
if I need to edit this out. Yeah, she's going to be in season two.
Fantastic.
And for her, she wants to now know how she can leverage it.
That brand. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we hear the challenges. But how do people do what it is you do, but not necessarily within your niche?
And what how do they become a business consultant?
Yes.
I
almost want to give you the free rein and like just as much advice and
as I can give. Yeah.
That you don't mind sharing.
No, of course not.
And we certainly will bring you back when people are like, Ade,
yes.
Ashanti was lit. Why do you ask her this, that, the other? I have a food business, you know.
Yeah. So you can come into the food business from... any pace, I believe, in terms of consulting and helping other people grow their business. You obviously have to have an understanding and knowledge of the business side and how the industry works and how you make A become Z.
Yeah.
Because people have a vision for their business, but then what happens is that they realize that they have to make compromises. So I'll give you an example.
Yeah, please.
You might start making a jam in your kitchen and you can spend an hour making that jam with strawberries that have been handpicked, which are not, you know, genetically modified in any kind of way. So it's this amazing organic jam that is just magic. Fair enough.
Yeah.
You can sell that to your friends and family. You can take that to a market and sell it and still allow it to keep its original form. If you want to scale that up into going to multiple supermarkets and for that to be manufactured, now that's where the gap starts, because actually your original recipe may not
cater for that. Yeah.
Cater for that, exactly. So it's like, how do you get something from A to Z if you indeed want to be at Z? There are lots of people who just enjoy selling their jam in their local community, and that's the way they want to keep it. So it's those gaps that you need to understand, and you need to have the networks and the know-how to help somebody fill. Yeah. That, I would say, is the difference between consulting in this area. And, you know, a lot of my peers who are consultants, some of them have niches within that. So, for example, a fantastic consultant that I recently interviewed for the podcast, her niche is in-store market
name
research.
Name drop. This is where we promote each other.
So Tessa Stewart.
Hey, Tessa.
Tessa Stewart, she has carved out a really interesting niche in that she does in-store market research, amongst other things, for her clients, and she works for big brands. And so she stands in store and she will survey people and ask them, why did you pick that up off the shelf? And that is crucial information that a business needs to know before it spends a lot of money on packaging, for example. Because if the customers say, I didn't even notice that bottle, then you may need to think about whether or not your packaging really hits that spot.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's really interesting. So people carve out different niches for themselves, and then that puts them in the best position, I believe, to help a client.
Is there anything else you want to throw out there insofar as how to start? Or
So I would say is just questions? Get yourself a good grounding in whatever it is you want to teach. That is the key, really, to have credibility, authority, and actually make an impact on other people, actually be able to see results happen for them, because essentially that's what people are paying you for. There are no guarantees in life or in any business, but you have to be able to say, I played a part, I enabled you to be able to take your business from A to T, if that's where you have the most power. So in order to be able to give someone those results and have integrity about your business, then you need to know what it is you're talking about. And that's one of the things that, for me, I was largely underestimated on in terms of my peers in the food industry, you know, because what they didn't bank on was the amount of experience I brought from my finance background, but also the level of research that I do. You know, for example, when I interview people, I already know all there is to know about them that they have allowed to be put out there.
Right, that's interesting.
So, you know, and that's what I keep really talking about, do your research. You know, sometimes I listen to interviews where clearly the interviewer hasn't done any research.
It's funny because I want to be equally as stunned and awed as if I'm listening to it for the first time. So, albeit, I mean, I did send you some questions,
yes.
but I don't, as you've noticed, I literally haven't asked you in a while.
I know.
I mean, for me, that's my style.
Yes.
Organically conversational. So hopefully the listeners who do mess with me, thank you very much, guys. I know you're listening now. You know, feel like they're part of it. They're just sitting down with us.
Yeah, so I think that's because of this context. Because when you're actually handing money over to someone, expecting a transformational result, you have to have enough trust and knowledge in them that they can actually do that for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Does that make sense?
No, 100%.
So, you know, because of the community that I'm building, I want to enable them, I want to empower them with as much kind of truthful information that helps them to make decisions in their business. So it's kind of incumbent on me to make sure that the resources that I pull together have integrity.
No, 100%. And without a shadow of a doubt, I'm sure everyone listening knows that. I mean, geez, you're phenomenal. So can we get to some light-hearted fire questions that I always ask my guests? Okay, so this is going to be fun. What would be the most useless superpower?
I don't know. I really don't know what the most useless superpower, because I think that in itself is, it can't be useless if it's a superpower.
If it's a superpower, yeah. So what is the most super useless thing?
You can be. I don't know.
Okay. What would you spend your last £5 on?
I've learned after everything and how seriously I take life, I'll just buy a rum and coke.
Nice. Where are you buying a rum and coke from for £5?
I don't know.
I want to know.
If I had change, I want to know your supplier.
I want to know your supplier. And my penultimate question, I guess, is, do you see yourself as successful?
No.
You don't?
Yeah.
Why?
I think that I don't necessarily believe in success, although I use the word obviously in some contexts. I believe in fulfillment. Because I think success, number one, is objective. I also think that the things that people do for success sometimes are unhealthy. And the example that sets to other people is not healthy either.
But again, so what's your definition of success? Because you are right, it is subjective.
Mm.
But that's what I'm asking.
Yeah, I think success is almost inanimate, or it's linked to achievements, like block achievements that are very visible to other people. Whereas I think fulfillment comes from within, because you could be fulfilled, but other people may not think you're successful at all. But that is success to you.
So, yeah, no, that's why I was asking to you, though, not what other people's definition.
Okay.
You're absolutely right. I mean, like, there's an example used, for instance, Richard Branson. He's one of the poster boys for entrepreneurs.
Yes.
But imagine if he actually didn't want to be good at entrepreneurship and building businesses. He just wanted to...
He wouldn't be...
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. From his own perspective, he's not successful, but from another perspective, he is.
So therefore, my one is inner fulfillment, and it is happiness, and it's health.
Right.
Those things, for me...
I feel like you seem fulfilled, or, well, you're getting fulfilled.
Yeah. I'm finally moving into that space, yes, which is good. And I'm in control of that, and I'm leading that. So from my perspective, that's definitely
success. Then you are successful.
Success, yeah.
And last but not least, m'lady, how would you like to be remembered?
Just to be remembered as kind and loyal.
Yeah.
Because those are the two things that are really important to me.
Kind and loyal.
Yeah.
Well, I barely know you, and I'm very grateful that you reached out to me.
No, thank you.
And guys, I really hope that this has been an amazing episode. In fact, it has been. I'm not going to ask you hope. What I do hope for is the sound comes out all right, because we are trying a new equipment and we're in a very loud environment. But you know, guys, I always try and do the best I can for you. And if there is anything in this episode that I've overlooked or missed, please holler at me. Please do. Just say, Ade, man, why are you always slipping? Why don't you get your guesser answer X, Y, Z? Or alternatively, if you actually do what Ashanti does, but not necessarily within the niche of food, I'd also love to interview you, wonder what your processes are like and whether they differ or whether or not it's universal. So guys, once again, thanks very much for joining me on another episode of Blacktaculate. Oh no, look what I almost forgot. I need to ask you, Ashanti, how can we find you? I'm going to have to chop this up. I won't chop it up. But no, how can we find you? And when we do, what do you want us to do?
Yeah, sure. So you can find me on Twitter at fem_foodpreneur. So that's FEM for mother _foodpreneur. Or you can come onto my website, which is femalefoodpreneurcollective.com.
Guys, I'll put that in the show notes. And when we do come onto it, what would you like us to do?
Yeah, so drop me an email if you want me to help you. In any way, actually, even if it's not to do with food. If you just want some advice about how to kind of move forward, if you want to become a consultant or you are starting a business, I have a wealth of resources that I could probably email you so you can get started.
I definitely will be emailing you for sure, because I could do help. And I'm less than 24 months old as well. So, guys, once again, love you all for joining me. You could have done anything in the world, but you decided to join me and listen to another episode of Lacticulate. So stay tuned for the next one. Bye.
Hey, guys. Once again, we can't stress enough how happy we are that you took the time out to listen to today's episode. We would love to know what your thoughts are, what you think about the episode, so please do leave us a comment on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. And if you are somebody who does what our guest does, and there were things that we didn't cover, or perhaps you might have a different perspective on how to get into the industry, how to sustain it, how to thrive in it, how to kill it, then please get in touch too. Because the truth of the matter is, Lacticulate, in an ideal world, and we know that this is never going to be truly complete, but we would love to put a black face and have a black voice tell us exactly how to get into an industry, how to sustain it, how to kill it, how to thrive, and so we all can too. So if you're someone who does something that we haven't featured on Lacticulate, please, please get in touch. Now, how do you get in touch? Well, you can reach us via email on contact@lacticulate.com or any of the major social media platforms. And it is simply Lacticulate. So we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, SoundCloud. Just give us feedback, help us grow, help us be accountable to you so the quality is always better, better, better. You guys are the best. Hope you have a great day, and we'll see you in another episode of Lacticulate.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.